You're listening to podcasts by Digital Clarity Group. This is Connie Moore. I'm the Senior Vice President of Research, and I welcome you to our podcast. Today, my guest is Chris Walker. Chris is an analyst with Digital Clarity Group, and he also is the CEO and founder of FIGS Information Management Consulting. We have a great topic this morning. We're going to be looking at information governance, which is a kind of a scary topic to a lot of people. And I think Chris is going to help us figure out exactly what it is and how it impacts organizations and where you should be on the adoption curve and so forth. So Chris, welcome.
Thank you, Connie.
We appreciate you coming out and talking about this one. Chris, a question that I've had is, I've read several of your blog posts on information governance on our website, and it seems to me like sometimes when you're talking about information governance, you're talking about methodology or process that someone might go through within an organization with a project team. And then at other times, it sounds like a product category, which is a little less familiar to me. So when you say information governance, what exactly are you referring to?
It's more about sort of the process and the policies and the procedures that organizations use to effectively govern information. And the definition that I use of information governance, and I'm quoting now from one of my blog posts, is information governance is all the rules, regulations, legislation, standards, and policies that organizations need to comply with when they create, share, and use information. So it's as simple and as complicated as that. As far as information governance being a technology category, that's not true at all. Information governance is facilitated and is achieved by applying technologies from various different categories. So if you think about e-discovery, if that's part of the toolkit that an organization needs, you would have those types of tools. Documented records management tools would be involved, security, information rights management, storage management. So it's really, really big. One of the reports that I read that came out last summer, I think, and I can't remember if it was July or August, by the Information Governance Initiative, they had a couple of breakdowns or graph charts, I think, of the information governance disciplines and information governance technologies. And I think the technologies they identified, 19 different technology categories or technology product categories that could be involved as part of the information governance initiatives in an organization. So it's really more of an umbrella concept. It's a series of disciplines supported by relevant tools to make sure that information is governed appropriately within an organization.
And information, I know, it could be very broad, ranging from a document to a video and something that even uses those technologies together to produce some artifact. But would it also include data and data quality and data management and that whole side of the house? Or is it unstructured information?
No, it can't be. It has to be anything that is stored within an organization in its component bits and pieces, right? Bits and bytes, if it's electronic information or electronic data. So rows and columns in the database table are absolutely under the purview of information governance, as are hard copy documents and everything in between. You mentioned video and images. Those absolutely come in. So it does not stop because the data or the information is structured or unstructured, right? So it's really about, as I wrote when I wrote the FIGS, it's about treating information as a corporate, as an organizational asset, you know, having somebody accountable for it, and then managing it and governing it appropriate to its intended purpose, value, and risk within the organization.
This sounds really daunting. How, you know, if you had 100 companies, how many of those companies do you think would be on this path?
I would say that out of the 100, I would say all 100 would be at certain points within that path, right? So, I mean, if you look at something as simple as network shares and managed storage and those types of things, right? You know, so organizations are doing that. If you think of mailbox limits in Outlook in an Exchange, that is a part of information governance because you're trying to manage and to govern the information that they have. Sometimes they're doing it from an infrastructure point of view, but hey, if that's where we're starting, that's where we're starting, and we can build on that. If you think of acceptable use policies, if you think of security policies around who can see what. So all of those things feed into information governance, where I think a lot of organizations are not, I mean, they fall short, sure, but that's because they're not, you know, they haven't taken the time yet, but where they get caught up as to in terms of, you know, how do we start, where do we begin, those types of things is that there's this, hey, we have to treat everything the same, which is not the case. As I said before, you apply governance to the information based on what the value, what the purpose, and what the risk associated to specific categories of information are, right? So things like customer data, you know, personally identifiable information, you know, health records, you'll treat those things differently because they have different value, they have different risks associated to them. You know, if you have just kind of sort of boilerplate, templated stuff that you're going to use in press releases and things that are fairly innocuous, you'll treat those things differently, right? You have to take into account what's it going to cost the organization to replicate the information or to replace the information if we lose it, right? Is it business critical information? Is it stuff that we would call vital? We can't conduct business without it. That's a different way of managing and governing that information, right? So it is daunting in a sense, but where organizations get, as I said, you know, get really tied up is trying to do it all at once, and you can't, right? It's like any other type of an enterprise initiative. You have to break it down into component parts and start slow, but you have to start.
Yeah. So the way you described companies that might be on the path, but my interpretation would be they don't even know they're on the path. In a way, that's reassuring. It's reassuring because it isn't like you have to launch this giant project to do everything and get funding from somebody and get sponsorship from somebody and probably have a really, really tough road ahead for the project, that instead you can take certain bite-sized pieces of information in the organization and deal with those and then expand and take on more and take on more and so forth, and over time progress toward information governance, and at some point over time have a realization that that's the path you're on. And would that be correct?
That is correct, and that's what I, you know, that's why I refer to myself sometimes as an information governance gorilla, right? So I use gorilla tactics to achieve information governance for clients. You know, one of the organizations that I've been doing some work with probably for the last 6-7 months, you know, we had a funded project, but it was not an information governance project. It was a SharePoint project to deploy SharePoint sites for their regulatory group, right? And you know, we had business requirements, functional requirements, the whole thing. But as I and the team were working on the project, we said, you know what, we're going to base the project on or create a foundation of good information governance principles and practices, right? So we will be working on information architecture. We will be doing things that are repeatable and that can be, you know, almost productized within the organization. You know, security groupings, how content is managed and how it is aligned to file plans, retention categories, and those types of things, right? How do we secure it? And then realizing things, you know, hey, we don't have to store copies of this because they're readily available elsewhere, right? So single source of truth. So it's all those things coming together that allows us to infuse these information governance principles and good practices within currently funded projects. And what was really nice about this client that I was working with on this initial initiative is that some of the decision makers, both in IT and in the business, understood what we were doing, said, hey, we should actually propagate this way of doing things across all of our SharePoint projects. Right. So as I said, you're doing it for kind of, we're getting the support and agreement top down, but we're executing bottom up.
Right. And that it seems like more of a recipe for success than some other ways to do the projects. I do have a question for you. Who should be involved in information governance project teams, or who do you draw upon in the organization to head this up?
It has to come from on high. You need the mandate from senior executives, you know, from the C-suite that says, hey, we're going to manage and we're going to govern and we're going to treat our information like the corporate asset that it is, and recognize that it has value. If you know, it's as simple as asking, if an organization lost all its information, could it continue to do business tomorrow? And the answer is no. I mean, it's the same thing as if you lost all your staff in one day, you could not continue to do business without them, right? So that message has to come from the top. I'm a huge advocate of having a C-level executive who is responsible for information governance in the same way that a CFO is responsible for financial assets of an organization. I think information is as critically important to an organization as cash is, as finance.
Well, I have to interject something. A CIO is Chief Information Officer, and you know, we've certainly gotten away from that, given the CIO all things technical. But is the CIO the logical owner for this?
Assuming that the I in CIO stands for information and not infrastructure, I think yes. I think they can be, provided they're actually focused on the information. And I would actually argue that things like the CTO or a chief infrastructure officer report up into a CIO, right? But so it's. I think the title is correct. I think some of the skill set required to manage information in that way is not there yet with you know, most modern day CIOs, right? And you're right, they're really very much technical, right? You know, do we have enough server space? Do we have enough bandwidth? Those things. Not that those things should not report up into the CIO. I don't think that should be the CIO's main job function. The CIO's job function should be ensuring that information within the organization, it comes back to it, is treated like an asset, the same way that you're treating cash as an asset and financial instruments, right? And then everything related to doing that reports up into the thing. So you know, what's the background that they need? You know, they'll need a knowledge foundation in legal and compliance. They'll need you know, some chops with big data and analytics. They'll need to have an appreciation of marketing, and right, so they really have to be a unbiased in terms of having an agenda to push forward, right? They have to be supportive of the entire organization.
Does the chief risk officer have a stake in this?
I think all C-level executives, and in fact, all business leaders within the organization have a stake in it, because they've all got, they've all got their own reliance on information, and whether that's produced within their lines of business or whether it's produced outside of their lines of business and they are a stakeholder for that information. Information is perhaps produced by one but used by many, and that has to be taken into account. I'm a great believer in, from an information governance perspective, that the policies can be created and drafted at a very much an organization level, but the implementation of those policies, in other words, the procedures, has to be very specific to the business units themselves and the lines of business.
And so if we were to just look further into the project team, once we get past the business stakeholder and business owner, who would be down more at the mid-level management, taking care of the project, staffing the project, and directing the project? What kind of people?
It depends on what the actual project is. I mean, I would never advocate for saying, hey, let's go do an information governance project. Or it's more that information governance should be different parts or should be a component of all the projects. And by that, I mean, again, I'll go back to the client I'm working with on the SharePoint project. If I could change the composition of that project team, what I would do is, and what they're missing, they don't have any representation from regulatory or legal and compliance on the project team. So I think those interests need to be there. But it's again, who are the various stakeholders? Who is affected by the project, right? Whatever the project happens to be, those people certainly need to be represented in the project, as well as some of the more corporate-wide representatives as well, right? So sort of legal and compliance have to be in there, and risk, if that becomes part of it. Doesn't mean they need to be on the project on a daily basis, but it certainly means that they need to be involved in key milestone discussions and some of the requirement stuff, and if there's sign-off required, what's got to go to regulators or to legislators or whatever. Their interests have to be taken into account.
If you were in the organization and had some job responsibility associated with unstructured information or data, anyway, you were, let's say, aware of the need for information governance in organizations. If you were trying to sell that upward, what's the most effective way? Would it be tell some stories about what went wrong in places that didn't do information governance? How do you sell it?
I think the key is to sell it in a way, or to have the discussion in a way that's going to resonate to the stakeholders. So if your stakeholder is somebody, let's say your legal counsel or in-house counsel, and you're a litigation magnet, and your key weakness is e-discovery because you're getting hammered all the time, or there's just, you're losing too much money on e-discovery costs, that's the way you have to frame that, right? If your stakeholder is somebody who's involved in sales, how do you say, hey, you're missing out on something because you're not using information correctly? So it's more of having a chat about value with that person, right? So, I've seen in the past where information governance really has been so much focused around risk, the loss of information or being sued or getting hammered with e-discovery costs, and not enough talk about, hey, what are the good things that we can do with information, right? How can we better leverage information to, increase sales, to retain employees, to retain customers, to win customers, those types of things, right?
I agree with everything you're saying, but I think that there's an element of this that is very hard to sell and get someone to actively sponsor and put money and resources behind. It's a little bit like telling people, you know, they should floss their teeth, or, you know, they should have, I don't know, their home inspected for something every 3 years or something. It's sort of like you really ought to do this, but if you don't, things are not going to fall apart. And therefore, it becomes hard to, I think, sell it without, you know, reverting to a risk caution. That becomes then a burning issue of, oh my gosh, we might leak customer data, or the customer data might be corrupted, and we might do something wrong with it that would cause a crisis. I think those become more compelling issues. This strikes me as the same discussion that we have with organizations about data quality. You know,
yep.
And getting people to buy into data quality is a very hard thing to do. So I think it's a great topic, and I think it's a really worthy cause, but I think it's a very hard one to get any traction on.
I don't think you're wrong necessarily. And you know, I mean, so you know, if you think of companies that have had data breaches, and I'm sure we can all think of a whole bunch of them over the last year and a half, and some very big names. And if that's the starting point to address some of these things, I think that's all well and good. You know, because they have to do something. And you're right. Sometimes people only buy insurance after their house is burnt down because they don't want to have to go through that pain and misery and suffering again. But in terms of, you know, information governance and information management, you know, depending on what the response is, you know, other than panic, that then sometimes can become a good building block. It's a good starting point for doing something, right? So if the answer to a data breach is, oh, let's bring in a proper enterprise content and records management system and start building out from that, and we'll start with addressing one need, then it's a matter of saying, okay, you know what, we've now invested in these tools, and we're developing policies and procedures. How else can we benefit throughout the organization by doing it? And that benefit to marketing is going to be different than the benefit is to HR, right? So some will react to risk, others will react to value. But it's a matter of finding, you know, what's the key message that's going to get somebody to resonate? Or you take the approach kind of, you know, that I'm doing with some of my work that I'm involved in, is we're not even talking about information governance. We're talking about, you know, supplying and building and deploying business solutions. And what we're doing is we're just baking information governance into the solutions that we're already building, right? So as we're building out, you know, in SharePoint content categories and content types, we're relating them and we're tying them to file plans and retention categories, right? And we're saying, this is how you're going to use information. This is how you're going to refer to it. You know, and it's those types of things that we're doing. So we're not necessarily executing an IG project. In fact, with the SharePoint stuff I'm working on, it's not IG at all, right? They're just business. The business units have specific needs, and we're using IG as a tool and a set of tools and disciplines, and we're using it to develop policies and procedures that are going to help them achieve their business objectives, right? So we're not asking for additional funding. We've already got funding. It's just, how are we doing it, right? We're taking a larger picture look at things, right? We're taking a more enterprise view of things. That, you know, the regulatory department is not an island unto itself. So we're looking outside of that department, saying, who else in the organization has a legitimate interest and need for this type of content and data and information and everything else, right? And we're applying
That's a great lead-in to my last question, which is, if you are in a company that's in that hypothetical 100, but you really haven't gotten on a path of consciously doing information governance, but, you know, you've taken maybe some preliminary steps like e-discovery or something like that. How would you advise those people who are passionate about the topic and aren't CXOs? Maybe they are team leaders or mid-level managers. How would you advise them to proceed? What should they focus on short-term?
They should focus on you know, doing things within what they've already got available to them in terms of various projects and initiatives, continue to do things the right way, right? And continue to have the right conversations or build the opportunities, create the opportunities to have the right conversations. And sometimes it's, you know, throwing a curveball at the executives and getting somebody to sit up and take notice, and then they'll ask the right questions, hopefully, right? You know, it's being patient as well, right? Because if somebody's not interested in IG, it doesn't matter that you are and that you're passionate, even if it's the right thing to do. You're not going to be able to sell it. It's a matter of finding out how to sell it and in what context. And sometimes it means don't talk about IG at all, right? It's, you know, you talk about something completely different. You talk about a human resource management system, or you're talking about CRM, or you're talking about SAP.
Yeah, that I think is really solid advice, because sometimes I think it's easier to get attention with the immediate issue in front of people's eyes rather than the more global, theoretical types of issues. So excellent advice. We've been listening to Chris Walker with Digital Clarity Group, and you have been listening to podcasts from Digital Clarity Group. We hope you will join us on other occasions. Check our website for a list of podcasts that are available and coming soon. Thank you.